Well, good morning, everybody. I'm Lucy DeGrace. I am Outreach Manager for Skagit Fisheries Enhancement Group. We're just two blocks east of here, where our office is located. And so just to introduce myself a little bit more, I moved here in August of 99. It seems like a lifetime ago. I was told when I moved here that you're not considered a local until you've lived here for 20 years. So I achieved my local status a couple of years ago. I'm honored. I actually live in Whatcom County, and so I've been a Bellinghamster for 23 years, and will die happy if I never leave Washington or Western Washington. I just love it here. I moved from Ohio, Cincinnati area, so I'm a Flatlander, and I just love being squished up against the, oh, I'm gonna take my mask off. Yes, it's easier to breathe. Squished up against the ocean and the mountains there in Bellingham. So I just love it here. So I, as the manager of Skagit, or outreach manager of Skagit Fisheries Enhancement Group, my job is to engage the community. And that, for me, these days is a lot of working with children, working with elementary age kids, and I really love that part of my job. So I'm just going to dive into presentation. I think I have about 25 slides. I'll try and you can cut me off when I've talked too much. I do talk a lot, as Cindy knows. I'm very enthusiastic about what I do and our organization and our mission. So I'll try not to go over by too much. But so, at any point, if anybody has questions, raise your hand, or I'm not sure how you usually do it, but I'm happy to answer any questions. So next slide. Has a little bit, it has our land acknowledgement, which you already did beautifully, and it's essentially the same. We work a lot with the local tribes to do habitat restoration for salmon. We actually have a native plant nursery, which is on land owned by the Samish tribe in kind of squished between Burlington and Cedar Woolley. We do a lot of habitat restoration partnerships with them. Sauk-Suattle with some of our Marble Mount area projects, and lot of work with Swinomish tribe downriver and Samish as well. Upper Skagit, kind of in the middle there, middle Skagit. And so we work with their natural resource folks a lot, and education staff as well. Our mission is to keep the Skagit a salmon-rich place for current and future generations. I don't fish myself. I love to eat salmon. Had never eaten salmon before I moved here because they do not naturally occur in Ohio. And I understand they've been planted in the Great Lakes, but I don't fish, but I do like to eat the salmon that other people catch. So I have a vested interest in keeping populations strong so that we can eat them, but also every other animal that depends on them can eat them as well. Next slide has a little bit about how we do our work. So there's a network of 14 regional fisheries enhancements across the state. Everywhere there is a salmon stream, there is a regional fisheries enhancement group doing pretty much the same thing we're doing. And the main way we accomplish that is working with private landowners who want to do some kind of a restoration project on their property. We also do quite a bit of partnership with, say, you know, not the Park Service so much, but Forest Service and, you know, public utilities that own land, lots of other nonprofits, land trusts that does a lot of, you know, they have conservation easements, and so we partner with them a lot. And let's see, what do we have? Engaging volunteers to do habitat restoration. And what we do, we couldn't do without volunteers. We plant thousands of trees a year, and a lot of that is done by volunteers. And that helps people have a stewardship ethic and an interest in what we're doing, an understanding of what we're doing because they're involved in helping with it. Doing a lot of monitoring, and we can't accomplish that without training volunteers how to help us count the fish that are coming back to our restoration projects, assess the vegetation, see if the plants are surviving that we're spending so much time to plant. And like I said, my job is, these days, a lot of it is working with school-age kids and doing a couple different programs with them. We just had four back-to-back field trips this past week, and it's a lot of mud, a lot of boots, a lot of gloves. So far this month, we've released about 1,400 coho fry into a couple of different streams around Skagit County. So let me know if you're interested in hearing about that program. Next slide. How many of you knew that the Skagit begins in Canada? Oh, wow, okay, impressed.
I learned it from
Oh, good. Myself on the map. Kids are sometimes really surprised to learn the first 25 miles of the Skagit is actually in British Columbia. And if you drive up there and go skiing at Manning Provincial Park, I recommend it. You can cross the river. You can hop over the Skagit River. I had to stop and take a picture when I was up there that it's just this little creek and a sign that says Skagit. It's kind of funny because it's such a big river downriver in Mount Vernon. It's a huge watershed. It is, 3,100 square miles of river. And the Sauk and the Sewaddle that flow from Snohomish County north into the Skagit at about Rockport is where they meet. And then the main stem that flows down from British Columbia. It's a really impressive watershed. And one of the things that we do a lot in our community engagement and student projects is explaining to people what a watershed is. And basically, it's a drainage basin. And we have kids put their hands together and think about all the water flowing, collecting in one common area, and thinking about a bathtub or a sink. And so getting people to think in terms of a watershed and everything flowing downstream, so everything that you put in it ends up in the place where you're trying to preserve the salmon. So next slide. Many of you are probably aware of all of the amazing animals in addition to salmon that rely on the healthy watershed, healthy streamside forests, which are called riparian forests. And even if they don't eat salmon directly, like the geese and the swans, they rely on a healthy environment as well. That eagle, I love that eagle picture where you can imagine the conversation between the eagle and the salmon. please don't eat me. But I'm a bird nerd. I know there's probably some other bird nerds. I'm easily distracted by birds. So this time of year is my favorite time of year in the Skagit. You can find me in Edison looking at all of the migratory raptors and waterfowl. And so this is one of the reasons, salmon are amazing, but this is one of the reasons I'm so happy in this area is because of all the birds that are attracted, not just by healthy riparian zones, but the swans and the geese attracted in part by agricultural areas, and so those are areas that are really important for us to preserve as well. All right, next slide. Lots of other animals besides the birds that I've mentioned, the otters that directly eat fish. There's all kinds of animals that depend on salmon indirectly or directly for their livelihood, and so these are some of the ones that we're trying to make life better for. When we plant trees, and I explained to kids just yesterday, we were planting some trees that were pretty far from the stream, and there were shrubs that are, you know, fruiting shrubs, and I said, what kind of animals are going to use these? Because birds or salmon aren't going to jump out of the water and grab a snowberry, but all the birds that live in the area in the riparian zone are going to benefit from what those kids did this past week, planting berry-producing shrubs. Next slide. I think we've got just representation of some of the recreational value of our area that we're also trying to work with lots of partners to preserve. That orca with the salmon in his or her mouth, that we've been focusing a lot in the last few years on, sometimes salmon aren't the thing that's going to grab somebody and make them be engaged, but who doesn't like orcas? I mean, charismatic megafauna right there. And so without enough salmon, Chinook in particular, for the southern resident killer whales to eat, that population goes away. And it's been really interesting working with not just the folks, the Center for Whale Research and the other folks that are studying the whales, the populations, the health, but also the industry that makes a living taking people out on boats to see those orcas. It's a really, as you know, it's not black and white like the orcas, a lot of gray areas, but we have a brochure back. I brought a stack of brochures that are in the back that if anybody is interested in learning more about some of the projects that we're doing which focus on the southern resident killer whales or our organization in general, there's several in the back there. All right, next slide. I took out a lot of slides from this presentation, which I've done before, which talks about each stage of the salmon life cycle. I don't think that you guys need to really get deep down scientific and study salmon, but as you may or may not know, they are an anadromous fish, which means they start their life in freshwater. They spend depending on the species, 2 to 3 stages of their life in the freshwater rivers and streams, and then they migrate to the ocean. They spend most of their lives in saltwater. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't realize, that no matter what the 5 species of salmon, they spend most of that time in saltwater. We know the least about what they do in that stage of their lives. We have some tools that we can kind of figure out in general where they go, and we have an idea of what they do, eat and avoid being eaten. And then somehow after 2 to 5 years, they determine that it's time to come back and reproduce. And so they come back to the same general area where they were hatched, and they reproduce, and then they die. And I've had some really moving moments with individual salmon, where one in particular, I was up at the Marble Mount boat launch watching a female, I can't remember if it was a Chinook or a pink salmon, just kind of drifting against the bank of the river. And I was unprepared for how emotional I got seeing her. She's already done her thing, she's already spawned, and she's almost dead. Just thinking about everything that she has seen and been through and survived in her short life. And I, like I said, I was unprepared for how emotional it made me. And ever since then, I almost feel guilty eating them because they're so amazing. They're such, the odds that they survive against is really amazing. But they are delicious. All right, next slide. That's okay. Like I said, I don't fish, but I appreciate those who do. And I learned how to cook salmon after I moved here, so I'm definitely a consumer of salmon. So the Skagit watershed, it supports all 5 species of Pacific salmon. Not all the rivers in this area do. It is the largest river contributing freshwater and salmon to Puget Sound. Does anybody know, did I say the largest? The largest contributing to Puget Sound, the 3rd largest on the west coast of the United States. And that's between Washington and California. Does anybody know what the 1st and the 2nd are? I know Cindy does. Love it in the back. Columbia is the 1st. Snake is part of the Columbia because it's a tributary to the Columbia, but the 2nd is Sacramento. The 1st person who has ever gotten that. I always have to say it's named for the capital of California. So yes, Columbia and then the Sacramento and then the Skagit, which seeing our little Skagit out here behind us is it's amazing to think that that is how big, how impressive, and how important of a watershed it is. All right. Well, it depends on who you ask. If you ask people at our sister organization in the Nooksack, they will say they have some. I think what the answer to that is, it depends on if you're talking about robust, self-sustaining populations of some of those species. And I think up to a point it is true, but I think there are some nuances that will make that not quite true. Yeah. We have really good populations of all 5 species, and it varies because a couple of years ago, in the last few years, the chum population has been not doing great, but it just depends on the year, depends on the run, depends on, conditions. Conditions have been weird in the last few years. The coho population was super late last year. We were still counting salmon in the Samish watershed in January, coho, which is unheard of. Usually by Christmas, they're all gone, but it was interesting. All right, next slide. Nutrient cycling. This is one of the things that we focus on a lot in our school programs is the transfer of energy. And we try to talk a lot about, the plants, all the benefits that the plants give to the stream. But also, how many of you knew that trees eat salmon? Yeah, so as this rotting salmon, this beautiful photo of a rotting salmon in the center, just thinking about all of the animals that rely, all the organisms that rely on nutrients from that rotting salmon, even if it's not a, you know, dramatic, you know, bear catching a salmon and tearing it apart. It's those nutrients that dissolve into the ground, into the stream. Trees that grow along salmon streams grow, have the potential to grow much bigger than trees that don't have salmon in their streams because of those nutrients they're bringing back from the ocean. They find elements in the trees that are marine derived, and it's from the salmon that are bringing them back. And the more I learn something new about salmon almost every single day in 23 years, almost every single day, and it always blows my mind. And, you know, that's one of the funnest things to talk about with kids is that, did you know trees eat salmon? Of course not. They don't have mouths. How can they eat salmon? But they benefit from their nutrients just like the animals do. So that's a pretty cool thing about trees. All right, next slide, please. And so what do? We do trying to address some of the threats that salmon face. There are a lot of threats. And one of the things that I've learned since, you know, starting to study wildlife management and conservation in college, the number one thing that makes animals become endangered and extinct. Does anybody here know? Habitat loss. And a lot of the other things can put pressure, undue pressure, if habitat loss is extreme, but habitat loss is the thing that the regional fisheries enhancement groups are trying to address. There's other groups that are addressing other elements, other pieces of the puzzle, but our organization is focused on habitat loss. How am I doing on time? Okay. Pull me off. Okay, good. So habitat loss is the main thing that we're addressing. Next slide, I think, goes into kind of what we're doing. These are just some of the statistics from this past year. Our annual report is one of the handouts that I brought, if anybody is a numbers person and wants to know all the numbers. But lots of trees, thinking about all of the things that trees do directly and indirectly to benefit salmon. Even after the tree dies and falls into the creek, it's providing maybe even more benefit to salmon than it is when it's living. So when it's living, if it's close to the stream, can provide shade and keep the water from heating up too much. The warmer the water is, the less oxygen is in it. And so anything that lives in water wants cool water, in this area anyway. When the trees fall in, when they drop a branch or the whole tree falls in, that impacts the hydrology and kind of how the water moves, how the gravel sorts, making spawning size gravel available for salmon, sorting out fine sediment, and so that, you know, providing hiding places depending on the size of the branch and tree and the size of the fish. Roots or just a branch hanging into the water are really great hiding places for juvenile salmon. There's all kinds of ways that trees benefit salmon, and this is one of the reasons we spend so much time planting so many trees. What is it, 21,000 something in just in 2022. That's done by not just volunteers. We do have a professional field staff, and we also have an AmeriCorps, WCC, Washington Conservation Corps crew. They do a lot of tree planting. They become professionals by the end of their term. So this is just some of the numbers for our organization. Next slide. One of the, I kind of think of it as opening the door for salmon, a no-brainer project. Fish passage projects are a big thing that we do in the summer when the streams are low or dry, and we can sort of exclude the salmon from that area. This lower left picture is showing a culvert, which is, the culverts are usually either undersized and making passage difficult. They fill up with sediment, and as they fill up, salmon can't get through them, or sometimes they're perched. They're very high and there's a drop at the end. Salmon may get shot out on their downstream migration, but getting back up, like up and through, is nearly impossible for them. And so culvert replacement projects or removal projects are one of those. It's like the habitat might be great and they just can't get to it. And that's an easy project to do. They are expensive, but they're easy. There's three different ways you can address these poorly functioning culverts. You can either take it out and decommission the road. And sometimes with Forest Service property, we've done a lot of that where the Forest Service is no longer harvesting, probably because they harvested it all, but they're no longer harvesting in an area. And so there's no longer a need for a road. And so that's the nicest thing, when you could just take out the culvert and there's no longer a crossing, the stream is just free. The next best is, I think that's the best. I guess going in the best is taking it out. Next is building a bridge. If it's a driveway or a road that still needs to be used, you can take out the culvert and build a bridge. There's usually, depending on the site, it's usually much less likely that there's going to be a passage issue when there's a bridge. And a lot of the ones that we've done recently are on private, like a shared driveway or like a private road. And so we work with engineers to make sure that, you know, fire trucks can get over them or whatever needs to get over the bridge can still, the weight can be borne by that bridge. And you can see that this one on Carpenter Creek is south of Mount Vernon in the Conway area. We've done a lot of work on that project, on that creek in the last few years. And then sometimes what happens is we just take out the smaller culvert, build a bigger culvert, 15 feet across. So going from maybe an 8-inch pipe to a much larger culvert mimics the effects of having a bridge there. So next slide has, I just talked about the planting trees a lot. I don't know if this is the best picture to represent this, but no matter what kind of project we're doing, we almost always do tree planting as a final touch when it's finished. And that's because there's a lot of ground disturbance that has to be done when you're doing an in-stream project. And so you're removing some vegetation. So putting vegetation back in so that we don't have a situation of a lot of bare soil. And like I said, we have a field crew that does this kind of work. I don't ever get to do the culvert projects, but where I come in on these projects is when it's time to, if we're going to have a volunteer planting at the end of those projects, that's where I come in and let's get a volunteer project going and see how many people we can get. Yeah.
How do the fires affect the sound? We've had a lot of fires.
Yeah. That's a really good question. Obviously, if any kind of riparian forest, removing of the trees near the stream happens as a result of fires, that would be sort of, I guess, a most direct way of impacting. One of the things I wonder about is, I when I'm trying to teach kids about turbidity, which is cloudy water, suspended sediment in water affecting salmon gills, I use the analogy of the smoky air and us not being able to go out because the particulates in the air affect our lungs. I don't know if that particulate in the air ends up in the water. That's a really good question. Other than the trees burning down, I don't really know. I can only imagine that it changes the chemistry of the soil and, a lot of ash and then a lot of rain impacting the rivers. It must. Does anybody else know? That's a really good question. I'm going to research that now. If you were a student, I'd tell you, maybe do an extra credit project and do some research on it. And your teacher might give you some extra credit. And then you could tell me when I see you again. All right, so a couple of, we have...
That's Lily.
Is that right? Cute. I didn't actually... I don't think I took any of these pictures, but... we've had, I think that was one of our Earth Day projects, the child in the 1 gallon hat. So we have the planting parties are kind of fun for us because they're all ages, all ability levels. We do have two more coming up this season if anybody really wants to plant some trees. So planting trees, we've just done a lot of it with third graders and it's fun because Cindy, I have some really great memories of planting trees at your property with the sheep helping. And it's one of those things where it's bring the whole family and it doesn't matter if you've never planted a tree before. And that's the kind of thing that we're trying to do is like, this is a community effort. There needs to be like a sense of ownership by the community. And if they're part of the, go by and go, I planted those trees, especially if it's on public land, then they can go back and see their trees as well. So that is one of the biggest in terms of like large groups getting involved and helping with restoration that we really enjoy doing. And then right now we're getting ready to start our vegetation monitoring, which is not something that I get excited about. I want to plant the trees, but we do get volunteers and interns to go back and take samples and measure, are they still alive? Is something eating them? I think South Mount Vernon, there's a lot of rabbits. And so we're having rabbits eating all of our plants in South Mount Vernon. There's a project by the wastewater treatment plant in between that and the river. And oh my gosh, have you guys been to that? Awesome. Well, Yeah, apparently some of my staff members, I feel like, hate rabbits more than they used to, or didn't used to hate rabbits, and really hate rabbits now because they're working. They really are. They have to eat too, though. So I have a pet rabbit, so I'm not mad at the rabbits. But all right, next slide. Presentine Park is one of the projects I was talking with some of you guys earlier this morning about restoration in Marble Mount. This is one of the projects just as sort of a feature that we are kind of excited about. Cindy, I don't know if you've been to this site. This is a property. It's a county park. It's a property that was homesteaded by an immigrant family from Germany in the 1870s, I believe they came here. And in 1991, the last descendant of the main family donated, I think, about 40 acres to Skagit County Parks. And it's been a park all along. And so our organization worked with lots of other organizations. What we did is the dark blue line at the bottom of that map is the Skagit River. The next little squiggly line up is an existing channel called Marble Mount Slough. It's chum this big come out of that channel. 10 minutes? Okay. And it's a really cool site. And I have spent a lot of time there in the last couple of years because what we did is we worked with, I won't go into the science of it unless anybody really wants to know, but that channel that kind of squiggles through higher up, the second channel that goes through the middle of it is a channel. It's a new channel. We haven't named it. We're just calling it Presentine Park Channel. It is made to take all the great habitat that is in Marble Mount Slough and double it, more than double it, mimic that kind of habitat. And really, the pictures that are at the top are pictures of, I believe it was October 2021, before the flood in November 2021. Those pictures were taken in October when there's in-stream structures put in to mimic some of those impacts when trees fall into the river. And a whole lot of, I believe some spawning gravel was put in there. While we were planting, this picture on the right side, that's one of the planting parties. I think that was on Orca Recovery Day in October of 2021. There were pink salmon swimming through while we were planting. And that's the most gratifying. It's like getting distracted by what you're doing because there's fish swimming right by you. It's very cool. But this project is really interesting. And we're doing a lot of side channel projects that focus on making more habitat for juvenile salmon. And people think about, oh, well, that doesn't look like a salmon stream. There's nobody spawning in there. Well, there are spawners in there, but some people have this image of what a salmon stream looks like. And when they see something that's very slow moving or maybe sort of backwater and they're like, that's just a swamp, that's critical juvenile rearing habitat. And people forget they need more than just spawning habitat. Those juvenile salmon, the coho, spend an entire year in the stream before they migrate out. So they need that slow moving, it's like a rest area on the highway for salmon. And so they really need that slow moving side channel habitat that a lot of people aren't that familiar with. So this is a really exciting project. If you're ever in Marble Mount, it's the park that you used to park at the Shell station and access through the woods. They're sort of decommissioning that part of the trail, and they're working on access on the other side before you get to the gas stations. There's a couple of old Good Food restaurant used to be there. It's closed now. From there and just down the street, there's a couple of trail access in there. It's a really neat project. Bears all over the place. I've not seen any bears themselves, but bear evidence. And so we would come back the next week and see that the bears had eaten the salmon that we saw the week before. So it's very cool. Presentine Park. All right, next slide. We had one of our salmon released, Concrete Elementary released salmon at that site a couple of weeks ago. It was very cool. I don't know if anyone's familiar with this. This is just, I'm off Dyke Road in South Mount Vernon, so not very far from where we are now. Similar, doing in-stream structures to improve habitat in that wooded area. It was an area where the river would backwash and salmon would get stranded. And so we did a project which reconnected it to the river so that salmon can use it. They can get in and then they can get back out when they're big enough to migrate down. And so that's a similar side channel project that we've done. All right, next slide. This is just showing some of the vegetation and spawner survey monitoring that we do. A couple of interns and community volunteers that help us measure the success of our restoration projects. All right, next slide. Like I said, I think this is the funnest part of our work, is involving youth. These girls in the lower right are holding up the salmon that they're getting ready to release into Hanson Creek and Cedar Woolley. The kids in the upper right are doing some water quality testing. We take them out and do some real simple, like how much dissolved oxygen is in, what's the temperature of the water, pH and turbidity, you know, is it good for salmon, and talk about, you know, what do the trees do to impact all of those water quality measures? And then, of course, lots of planting. Do you recognize Mike Brondy, Cindy, in that lower left picture? And then these are pictures of just some general volunteer. That picture on the left was taken at Britt Slough, one of the Southern Mount Vernon side channel projects. All right, next slide. So that brings me to, if anybody here hasn't been involved yet and wants to be involved, we do have a lot of opportunities. There are, if you like planting trees, then we have lots of opportunities in the spring and the fall, generally starting the last week of February through Earth Day. Almost every Saturday we do events. And then again in starting in October for Orca Recovery Day in middle of October through right up until before Thanksgiving, sometimes into December, depending on how much we have to do. We also have a native plant nursery in Cedar Woolley. It's off of Kelleher Road. And I feel like working in the nursery, I'm not a plant person, I'm more of an animal person. But as I'm learning, I find working in our nursery a very meditative thing. And anybody else who gardens or works with plants knows what I mean. And so we sometimes need people just to go out and water the plants in the summer, more and more recently. And lots of other opportunities which we have on our website, if you're interested. I do have the website on my last slide up here. Next slide. I think I just went over that. Go ahead to the next slide. Oh, Earth Day. I brought some flyers in case anyone is looking for something to do on Earth Day. Earth Day is on a Saturday this year, so we're actually going to hold our Earth Day event on Saturday, April 22nd. There are flyers, like I said, we're working with Skagit Land Trust. They have some property. It's called Utopia Conservation Area in Cedar Woolley. It's a really neat area. I've taken dozens of high school and middle school groups out there to plant trees in snow, in rain, in every kind of weather. Neat area, used by a lot of wildlife, and I'm surprised they're still planting to do there because we've been there so much. But we're going to be doing some planting, probably some blackberry removal, and it's always nice to partner up with other nonprofits for Earth Day. We can kind of amplify our reach and amplify our message, and so we really like working with those folks. So that'll be April 22nd. We do ask people to register for that just so that we have enough food and enough coffee and enough shovels and things like that. So next slide. That is pretty much all I have. I just try to keep working in Jessica Newley's coho pictures. She's a friend of ours who snorkels in local streams and gets underwater photos of salmon. These happen to be Marble Mount Hatchery coho, but it's the low-hanging fruit, and it's easy to go there when the salmon are returning, and she just swims with the salmon and gets great photos. And then the last slide, I think, has my contact information. There you go. If anybody would like to reach me, that's my email address, and then our website is there that has more information about specific projects, about, you know, how we spend our money, where we get our funding from, all opportunities to volunteer, and yeah. Any questions?
We'll have coffee hour questions.
Okay, great. Thank you.